is WWTC Minneapolis St. Paul, FM 107.5, K298CO Minneapolis, Intelligent Radio.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Shareholders of U.S. Steel are selling out to Nippon Steel.
More than 98% of the shareholders voted Friday at a special investor meeting to approve the takeover, according to an initial count of ballots announced by U.S. Steel. The amount of the deal is reported to be $14.1 billion in cash. Despite the vote's near unanimity, it's drawn opposition from the Biden administration on economic and national security grounds, including the potential impacts on unionized workers and supply chains. Meanwhile, Japan's Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said on Wednesday during a White House news conference that he hoped discussions on Nippon Steel, quote, will unfold in directions that would be positive for both sides, unquote. George Williams reporting.
The bird flu outbreak is now into cows, but the nation's health officials say people are at a very low risk. This is SRN News.
Eric Metaxas explains what we are witnessing.
This prosecutor in New York City is trying to get Donald Trump to pay like $400 million.
Yeah.
And if he can't pay that in cash, they're going to like try to seize Trump Tower.
Mm-hmm.
This is what communists do, ladies and gentlemen. You don't like them, you find a crime, and then you seize their property.
The Eric Metaxas Show, overnights at 3 on AM 1280, The Patriot, Intelligent Radio.
Inside your 1 o'clock hour this Sunday afternoon here on AM 1280, The Patriot. That means you're moments away from the closer edition of the Northern Alliance Radio Network with Brad Carlson. But first, I want to remind you that Mother's Day is coming up, and here at AM1280ThePatriot.com, it's our Mother's Day sweepstakes. Someone you love, appreciate, well, because she's your mom. How about entering to win $500 for her? Our annual Mother's Day $500 sweepstakes will provide the grand prize winner $500 to give to their mom. Visit AM1280ThePatriot.com. From the JTR Roofing Weather Center, sunny, high of 72.
Portions of the following program may have been pre-recorded.
Stand by for the Northern Alliance Radio Network. And go launch sequence. Engineering?
Go flight.
Master control?
Go flight.
Studio engineer?
Go flight.
We are go for launch in T-minus 3, 2, 1. We have liftoff.
The Northern Alliance Radio Network is on the air. Live and local from the AM 1280 The Patriot Studios in Eagan. Here is the closer, Brad Carlson.
AM 1280 The Patriot. It is the Northern Alliance Radio Network. Back with another edition of the broadcast we like to call The Closer. That's me, Brad Carlson. Thanks, as always, for tuning into our show. You can check out my blog at bradcarlson.org. And we are here taking phone calls, 651-289-4488. If you'd like to weigh in via Twitter, feel free to do so at hashtag NarnShow. That's hashtag N-A-R-N Show, via Twitter, that is. And if you'd like to follow along on Facebook, just go to Facebook and do a search for the Northern Alliance Radio Network and give our Facebook page a like or a follow if you haven't done so already. And feel free to follow along the broadcast via live stream. Yeah, we do have the live stream up and running right now at our Northern Alliance Radio Network Facebook page. And as always, we thank you for tuning in. Folks, we want to get to our first guest right away because his time is short. And, well, he happens to be about 8 hours ahead of us where he's calling us from. A longtime friend of the broadcast and political wonk, Matt Makowiak. He's been visiting Israel for the past week or so. And, yes, he was still there yesterday when the Iranian drone strikes and missile launches took place. Matt was, again, he was not far from where some of the strikes had occurred. And this was, I guess, some intelligence had come out that Iran had planned some strikes. And we'll talk with Matt on basically what was going on and what he was feeling and thinking as this was occurring and what is next as far as what he anticipates being Israel's response. Matt Makowiak, always good to talk to you, sir. It's been a while. How are you?
Hey, Brad. It has been a while. Hope you're doing great. Thanks for having me on.
First of all, the most important aspect, Matt, how are you physically, mentally? Are you doing good?
Yeah, doing great. I appreciate that. Last night was an unusual night. Maybe not for the Jewish state of Israel, but certainly for me. I have been on an educational trip, across the country for the last 7 days with a group of about 10 people, really just a life-changing, unbelievable trip from, you know, Jerusalem to Tel Aviv to down to the south along the Gaza border, up to the north along the Lebanese border, over to the Sea of Galilee, you know, swam in the Dead Sea, seen all kinds of things in between, just an extraordinary trip. So last night, as we were, you know, spent our last night, and I was supposed to be flying out this morning, as we're talking, Sunday morning, local time here in Israel. Obviously, the Iranian regime launched over 300 drones and rockets towards the state of Israel. And yes, it is true. One, it appears only one of them came to Jerusalem, but it did come, I would say, within about a mile, maybe even less than that, maybe half a mile from where we were staying. And if you saw on social media, there were images of these rockets, you know, over very specific locations across the country. And one of them that you might have seen that got a lot of attention is the one that was above the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is literally adjacent to the Western Wall. You know, it's the third holiest site in the Muslim religion. And so I was in, you know, my hotel room at, I don't even know what time it was at that point, maybe 10 or 11, maybe midnight local time, and heard a large boom, the kind of noise you don't want to hear generally, let alone while you're in Israel at a tense time. What I later learned is that boom was not the rocket hitting anything. In fact, it was the Iron Dome program intercepting it. Iron Dome is a missile defense system that the United States provided to Israel that allows for interception really by blowing up these missiles and creating lots of, you know, debris, but that debris is far less dangerous to a population than the rocket itself. So thankfully, Jerusalem was fine. And in fact, I think Israeli military announced that 99% of the drones and rockets were either intercepted or destroyed. So there was actually very little damage to Israel last night. And that is because of a unbelievably sophisticated and well-coordinated air defense campaign between the United States, United Kingdom, Israel, and perhaps you know, most historic partner is the Kingdom of Jordan.
Right.
So yeah, unbelievable events last night. Could have been far worse, not just for me and our group, but for everyone in Israel. Thankfully, I believe the only person who died, sadly, was a 9 or 10 year old girl in Israel, a Bedouin, who was struck by the debris when the missile was intercepted and destroyed. And so, outside of that, I think one of the missiles hit their military base in the south, but thankfully, I think no one was injured and there was only minor damage. So anyway, that's a long first answer to your question. A lot going on last night, and I'm looking forward to exiting this country, even though I had a wonderful week in the morning.
Oh, yeah, we definitely appreciate all the very valued insight and information. Obviously, Matt, the Israeli defense minister, he had come out at some point yesterday indicating that they fully anticipated that these attacks were going to occur. So obviously they were very well prepared. So when that indication and inclination had come out, how do they warn the citizens, the visitors? Are there air sirens? Are there broadcasts via television? I mean, or were you forewarned that these were coming, Matt Mikowiak?
Great question. So yeah, let me answer that sort of in terms of the nation's ability to have been prepared, and then I'll answer it in terms of the immediate kind of a warning and how that works. Because listen, I've been learning all this just myself over the last week. We spent a lot of time with current and former military, you know, former intelligence leaders, diplomatic leaders, all kinds of, you know, experts in lots of different aspects of what is a very complicated region. And one of the things you learn if you spend any time in Israel at all is that what we experienced last night, just from my vantage point in Jerusalem, which we thought was going to be very safe, given how far it is from a number of the areas where they would be launching the attacks, but also because it's such a holy place and it is in fact a disputed place. It's a place that those who don't like Israel would like to take Jerusalem back. So you'd think they wouldn't want to destroy it. So broadly speaking, Israelis are used to almost every structure, whether it be a business or a home, has a shelter in it. And that is because they've been sustaining and dealing with rockets and other types of incoming for decades. So Israelis are very used to that kind of circumstance. And there are early warning apps and communications to cell phones. But their version of Homeland Security is called Homefront Command, and that gives them sort of threat level directives that affect things like schools and how large a gathering can be, and other things like that. And then there's also an app called Red Alert, which I did not have until last night, but I did download myself, which sends push notifications to phones if rockets are incoming. And so I was seeing those really, I mean, at times they were coming in, I would say, 30 or 40 a minute. Now, thankfully, again, only one, I believe, came to the precise area of the country where I was. But if you were in the south, if you were in the north, if you were near Tel Aviv, were it not for both Iron Dome and for this coordinated air defense system that was literally, destroying many of these missiles before they came in, there could have been massive, massive, massive damage, not just to the country, but also to individuals. So in terms of the more particular question, we did have an alarm go off at the hotel that I'm at, and this hotel does have a shelter, and we knew that. Unfortunately, I heard the boom before I heard the alarm and before I went to the shelter. So it probably was too late by the time I heard the alarm. Guess we'll never know. And I went down the shelter for 10 or 15 minutes. I didn't spend the whole night down there. I would have if I had been asked to do so. But we got it all clear after, 15 or 20 minutes. But, yeah, I mean, it is a remarkable experience to do that for the first time, particularly as an American. Right? I mean, very few Americans have ever been in a circumstance where they had to go into a bomb shelter. Or they were in an area that was receiving, rockets incoming. I mean, it's a surreal, out of body experience, Brad. I don't recommend it.
Right.
Again, I mean, this nation takes its defense seriously, extremely seriously, we were in good hands, and we were in good hands again, partly because of Iron Dome, but also partly because of this really unprecedented and coordinated air defense cooperation between these four nations. I think Saudi Arabia might have been part of that, too. So I think there might have been at least five nations involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely some unprecedented assistance, as you alluded to, particularly with Jordan. I want to talk about you personally, Matt Mikowiak. Obviously, your family was well aware you were there. And obviously, I would imagine probably had a little trepidation given everything that's been going on in Israel, particularly since October 7th. At what point and how soon were you able to contact them and let them know, hey, I'm good, I'm okay, I'm seeking shelter, I should be fine? I mean, because obviously, Matt, I'm sure they were quite worried about you.
Yeah, you're such a sweet guy, Brad. That's the kind of question that, the average, quote-unquote average radio host might not think to ask, but that's very consistent with
your friends, man. It's all good.
But, no, I wanted to say that. Yes, so... and in fact, let me back up for a second because there was another aspect to the question you asked before that I think would be useful to your audience to go into.
Sure.
There have been reporting throughout the country for 48 hours that Iran was preparing, its retaliatory strikes for the killing of three military commanders in
right.
Syria.
Yep.
There was a lot, I will say, man, there was a lot of doubt about how serious that timeline was, how realistic it was, whether it was sort of saber rattling, whether it was sort of PR. Mm-hmm. In the end, that timeline was quite precise. And I think it was really towards the end of that 48-hour window when that started getting reported that it happened. And I'll tell you, I did not get worried until one thing happened. This is when I first got worried, when I realized something imminent could happen. And there was a pool report that the President of the United States, Joe Biden, was going to leave his vacation in Rehoboth Beach and return to the White House to go to the Situation Room. I want to say that was around maybe 5 or 6 p.m. local time here. And of course, the rockets were flying 3 or 4 hours later. That is the kind of thing, you don't interrupt presidential vacations. I know that sounds maybe silly or trite, but you don't do that. Presidents need relaxation.
Yep.
There are a lot of logistical aspects to them being somewhere. It's not easy to move them in an unexpected way, in an unplanned way. So that told me this was going to be serious. But so when that happened, I don't know that I shared that with my family, but basically in real time, as things were happening, as there was international news and on CNN and other places, that these rockets were coming in. I mean, I was getting an enormous amount of incoming just to my phone, not just from my family, who I talked to my mother, I talked to my sister, I talked to my wife, in real time, but also just enormous number of friends. I have shared a lot of the photos and videos from my trip, so people knew I was in Israel. I do have fairly large, social media platforms. So it was no secret that I was here, and I wanted to share that. A lot of people haven't been to Israel. I've gotten a lot of appreciation for people who really enjoyed being able to see some of that. I know you follow some of that yourself. So
yeah.
I feel like my family and close friends were I think, in fairly well up to speed on what was really happening. And I was obviously sharing as much honest information as I could. It was scary for a little while. There's just no question. You just don't know how serious it is and what can happen and how safe you are. in the end, I think we were pretty safe. But again, it goes back to that Iron Dome and that air defense coordination effort that was so remarkable and really, I think, unprecedented.
Once again, we're joined by Matt Mikowiak, longtime friend of the broadcast, our political wonk. Matt, before we let you go, obviously, speaking of the political aspect, we want to kind of get your insights on this. Obviously, we've been following what's been happening in the air country of Israel for a little over 6 months now since the horrific Hamas attacks of October 7th of last year. And we've shown, and Israel has proven that if they are attacked, they will defend their homeland, whatever it may take. And unfortunately, in some areas, they haven't fared well in the propaganda war. What do you anticipate their response being to this? The IDF has come out and said that there will be a response. What sort of inclination do you have? What kind of response will be? Because you know this is Iran is a nuclear power, and they are not, I don't think, averse to mutually assured destruction, given kind of their ideology. So what do you sense from what you've gleaned thus far Israel's response might be?
Yeah, and there's a dispute about whether they really are a nuclear power yet. I mean, clearly, the Iran deal, I think has not only provided the resources for Iran to be funding these proxies and putting these weapons in the hands of terrorists and doing the things they did last night, which was not cheap to have launched that many advanced drones and missiles. But I don't think Iran's a nuclear state. And the reason I don't think it is yet is, number one, I think they would have said so. And they would likely have even threatened or even perhaps used a nuclear weapon. But in addition to that, I think if they got really close, I think Israel would take extraordinary measures to ensure that doesn't happen. They've taken some steps already on some of their nuclear facilities. And there's another in Natanz that I think could be a target here in the next few days. Look, I think to me the big question is: look, Israel's going to retaliate, and it's unfortunate that the president, who I think was pretty good on Israel initially when October 7th happened,
agreed,
has been really quite weak and soft, and I think awful the last two or three weeks, undermining Bibi, supporting Schumer's call for new elections, really just being quite creating distance between the United States and Israel. And then I think, to some extent, strong the last 2 days until the end, when now he's trying to make it sound like he does not want Israel to retaliate. And that's just absurd. If you don't retaliate, then Iran's going to do this again. They have learned no lesson. So I think the big question is, are they going to target this capability to launch these drones and to launch these missiles from wherever they were launched from? And I think that likely will happen. I think the other question is going to be, there's talk of a kind of a regional effort to try to put pressure on Iran, whether that's diplomatic, whether it's economic, whether that goes to the UN, which I doubt because the UN's so weak.
Right.
But it would take time to build that kind of effort, to put that kind of effort together. But you could see some of the Sunni nations, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, France, some others, Britain, perhaps the United States, launch into a partnership to really isolate and economically punish Iran. I don't think that is the solution. I think that's part of the solution. But unless you take this threat away, Israel's going to be living from a day-to-day perspective, wondering if they're going to have another situation where 300 missiles come in a two-hour period. Look, the United States would never accept that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Brad, think about it for a second. Mm-hmm. Take the identity and the party of the President of the United States out for a second. Whoever the President of the United States is, if Canada or Mexico was in a position to launch 300 missiles and was threatening to do it, in fact, had already done it, we would not allow them to have that capability. And if that's how we would feel, that is obviously how Israel feels. They feel that way even more so, given what happened on October 7th, which obviously was the worst day for Jews in world history since the Holocaust. And I've learned a lot about October 7th. I will tell you, I toured the Nova Music Festival site. I toured a kibbutz, a neighborhood, where dozens and dozens of people were killed and dozens of people were kidnapped, and the brutality that we learned from one of the survivors was something that I will have a very hard time forgetting the rest of my life. So God, I just say God bless Israel. It's a democracy in the Middle East. It's a strong ally of the United States. It's the only place that Jewish people can feel safe to live in. Doesn't mean every decision they make and everything they do is perfect, and no one is above criticism from time to time, but they are not engaging in terrorism. They do not target civilians, despite what you hear in the national and international media. They simply do not. They in fact, let civilian populations know before they go in. They drop leaflets. They move refugees. They do all kinds of things. It is these terrorist organizations and these terrorist regimes that hide among civilian populations so that they can claim that, that Israel's targeting civilians. So these are scary days for Israel, and it's impressed upon me how important that, that partnership is between Israel and the United States, given what happened last night and given where this is headed. We, no one wants to see World War III. No. It's a very scary prospect. But Israel needs to fully destroy Hamas. To do that, they're going to have to go into Rafah to destroy the four battalions that that remain and to reclaim the 133 hostages, most of whom are still there, whether they're alive or dead. And then they've obviously got to restore deterrence to Iran so that they're not in a position to be waiting for the next time they decide to fire 300 missiles into their country. This simply cannot continue as it is, and Israel, I think, is has resolve and toughness and courage and commitment. And it's not simply about Netanyahu. It is simply it is about this population. This population here in Israel is not mad about civilian deaths in Gaza. They are mad that, that the Israeli government has not yet gone into Rafah. And so just think about that for a second. Mm. I mean, certainly no one wants to see the civilian deaths, and there's a lot of heartbreak for what's going on in Gaza. There's a lot of desperation there. The responsible party for that is Hamas. It is not Israel, period. That is not a debatable point. If you are being honest and serious, it is simply not an, a debatable point. So Israel's going to defend itself. They are going to retaliate. It may not be what the United States would want, but they have to put their security first. And boy, I certainly hope the United States continues to remain a very strong partner. It's not enough to just be a defensive partner, because Israel cannot continue to exist and be a strong and safe country and prosperous country if all they do is defend themselves. They're in a bad neighborhood, a rough neighborhood. With regimes in and around their borders who not only are opponents or enemies, but simply do not believe they should exist to begin with. I mean, it's an unbelievable circumstance. So it's been a fascinating week. I'm grateful for the experience. I'm looking forward to getting out of here, getting home. But I've enjoyed coming on today and talking to you about it.
Yeah, Matt, we definitely appreciate the time. Very valuable information. And again, I can't emphasize it enough. Grateful that you are safe, as well as the vast majority of the civilians. Citizens of Israel. Travel safe, Matt, when you get home to us, to America, and we'll definitely catch up again in the future. We appreciate it. AM 1280 The Patriot, Northern Alliance Radio Network. Me, Brad Carlson, back with another segment on the broadcast. Go nowhere.
Salem Surround partners with your business to deliver custom digital marketing solutions. Surround your target audience wherever they engage, search, surf, socialize, or review to keep your business top of mind. Learn more at minneapolis.salemsurround.com.
The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
My dad says I'm his pride and joy.
My mommy says I was her big surprise.
My mom says I'm her best helper.
I'm adopted. My dad says I was a gift.
That's right, kids. Each of you are a miracle and a blessing from God. Hello, my name is Angie. I work with Pro-Life Across America, the billboard people. If you know someone who is pregnant and in need of confidential counseling, including alternatives to abortion or post-abortion assistance, please call Pro-Life Across America at 1-800-366-7773 or check us out online at ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org. Pro-Life Across America is educational, non-political, and tax-deductible. Please help support our life-saving outreach.
A baby child is being 18 days from conception. Pro-Life Across America,
the billboard people. Hey, it's Michelle Tafoya, and I'm going to share with you a best-kept secret I only recently learned about. Furniture Manor of Osseo, one of the metro area's hidden gems. Furniture Manor is a family-owned furniture store that's been a beloved and trusted fixture in the Osseo community since 1969, and their time-tested reputation is a testament to their craft and commitment to their customers. What makes Furniture Manor special is their huge selection of furniture, from classic to contemporary, from American-made brands like Smith Brothers, Lexington, and Flexsteel, and with hundreds of different fabrics, styles, and finishes, they can help you design a home that reflects your style and personality, and they're professionals are ready to help you achieve that. So if you're looking to create a comfortable and refined living space with the help of experts who genuinely want you to be happy, Furniture Manor of Osseo is the Metro's best kept secret that you won't want to keep to yourself any longer. And Furniture Manor is easy to find just off Highway 169 in Osseo. Stop in today and get in on the secret.
Hear the top voices in conservative radio on your Amazon smart speaker.
Now streaming AM 1280 The Patriot. Intelligent radio.
Just ask Alexa to play The Patriot Minneapolis. That's play The Patriot Minneapolis.
Hey, welcome back. AM 1280 The Patriot. Northern Alliance Radio Network with me, Brad Carlson. Thanks as always for tuning in. Here to take your phone call, 651-289-4488. You can also weigh in via Twitter. Hashtag NARN show. That's hashtag N-A-R-N show for comments or questions. And we do have the live stream of our broadcast up and running at our Northern Alliance Radio Network Facebook page, so check us out there. And as always, we thank you for tuning in, and deep, deep, deep appreciation to my friend Matt Makoviak for calling in from Israel. They're 8 hours ahead of us, so it's about 9 o'clock, and I don't know that he got a lot of sleep last night after everything that had happened. So, and I imagine he's wanting to get home as soon as possible, and yet he still was the modicum of professionalism by delivering not only personal anecdotes from his trip there, but also weighing in on the political aspects of this as well. So we appreciate Matt's time, no question about it. Saying, you know, we'll just do a quick 10-minute segment, and he was willing to stay on for a good 15, 20 minutes. So as a result, we're going to have a rather short segment here, but, you know, we've got the rest of the hour to kind of unpack some of the topics I wanted to get to. Well, this was kind of, it had been signaling for some time that Donald Trump was going to weigh in on his abortion stance. Obviously, this is kind of the issue which Democrats are kind of waving as the proverbial bloody shirt, you know, saying that Republicans are, you know, they want to bring us to the Handmaid's Tale, they want to control women's bodies and all that sort of thing. And obviously, when Roe v. Wade was overturned nearly 2 years ago now, this is an issue which Democrats have been leaning into. And I'll be able to expand on this probably in the next few segments, but, and I've said it before, it seems like Republicans have been caught flat-footed on this issue. You know, they've been using this as an issue to draw in a whole new swath of voters, i.e. those who consider life the most important issue, and electing politicians based on that, and hoping they can make some strides and eventually eradicating abortion. And I'll just say up front, whether you have some of the most restrictive abortion laws in the country, whether it be, you know, down in Mississippi or Georgia, or now given the way the Arizona Supreme Court ruled recently, Arizona's abortion law is basically the only exception is if the health of the mother is in jeopardy. Okay. Or on the other end of the spectrum here in Minnesota or in Colorado or New York State or California, where basically abortion is allowed right up until moments before birth, they're really abortion laws are not going to dictate whether or not abortion is completely eradicated. I've said it many times on this show. It's going to be by changing hearts and minds. There has to be a dramatic cultural shift. Because, again, if you're passing restrictive abortion laws, well, you know, the Democrats, you know, get used as a cudgel and saying, look at this, the Republicans want to bring us back to the dark ages. They want to control women's bodies. And, you know, pro-lifers, particularly a lot of those who vote Republicans, say, well, no, we believe that life begins at conception and the fetus growing inside you has been deemed personhood and therefore is worthy of not only moral protections, but legal protections, allowed to live. It's a separate entity. It has nothing to do with you, your body, controlling your body. It's about protecting the legitimate life that was within you. And that's been the argument going back and forth. And quite honestly, the culture has shifted to where, hey, we should be able to live our lives without consequences. It's kind of the mindset. So again, a lot to unpack here, including Donald Trump's statement on what he views abortion and what he's going to make as one of his campaign issues. Brad Carlson, the closer, back with another segment on the broadcast, AM 1280 The Patriot. Go nowhere.
It has been confirmed. Those brave Americans who are trying to preserve free speech continue to be censored, shadow banned, or silenced. Wealth Protection Research is on a mission to share the liberating ideas of some of America's brightest and most free thinkers. People like Jim Rickards and Porter Stansberry, whose ideas are putting financial control back in the hands of everyday people, helping them protect their money against a government that seems intent on destroying it. Text TRUTH to 76626 to find out more. As this election moves forward, we just released a report that reveals our three favorite ideas for protecting and growing your wealth during the 2024 election. These ideas are especially critical if you have an IRA or 401k. Text TRUTH to 76626. Discover ideas that are so simple and actionable they might save your retirement. Text TRUTH to 76626 now for your free report. That's TRUTH to 76626. Standard text and data rates may apply.
Join Gene Sullivan each week on Where You Live, where he takes on... Gene, who do you take on anyway?
Maniacal landlords, slippery renters, overbearing HOA boards, demanding homeowners. Oh, and the legislative lunacy brought on by local politicians wanting to fix everything for us.
It's a common sense perspective on the news and stories that affect you the most, right where you live. Join Gene Sullivan every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. on AM 1280, The Patriot.
Over 50,000 police officers are assaulted on the job each year, leading to injuries and death. This is the reality they deal with when making contact with the public. Another reality is that if someone doesn't comply with a lawful order or uses force against them, police may have to use sufficient force in response to obtain compliance. The use of force is always ugly. Nobody likes it, especially police, and nobody knows how it will turn out. Spread the word. For de-escalation to work, both parties must de-escalate. And de-escalation isn't necessary if there is no escalation. Help police by not escalating. Don't attack or try to disarm an officer. Whether it's getting asked a question, getting a citation, or getting arrested, don't argue, don't resist, don't flee. After the encounter has been resolved is the time to address any complaints. Comply now, complain later. Keep everybody safe. This message brought to you by the National Police Association. To learn more about how to help law enforcement accomplish its goals, visit nationalpolice.org.
America is giving away its inventions and technology to China.
The Chinese Communist Party intends to surpass us and to be the world leader in innovative technology.
This shocking new movie, Innovation Race, exposes the potential Chinese takeover of 5G and the internet, threatening America's economic and military security.
Dominating technology means you dominate the world itself.
Watch the movie Innovation Race now on demand or DVD at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
Hey, welcome back. AM 1280 The Patriot. Northern Alliance Radio Network with me, Brad Carlson. Thanks always for tuning in. And here to take your phone call, 651-289-4488. You can also weigh in via Twitter at hashtag Narn Show. That's hashtag N-A-R-N Show for comments or questions. And don't forget, we do have a live stream of the broadcast. It is up and running at our Northern Alliance Radio Network Facebook page. Just go to Facebook, do a search for the Northern Alliance Radio Network, and give our page a like or a follow if you haven't done so already. And again, follow along of the live stream where there is a comment section where you can leave a comment or question as well. And as always, we thank you for tuning in. I started to develop this a little bit last segment about how abortion looks to be another issue this election cycle. And there's been a lot of back and forth amongst Republicans about how Republicans just need to stay away with it, away from it, or Republicans need to punt on the issue and acknowledge, hey, there's always going to be abortions. Just, you know, let's kind of moderate it a little bit. Let's, say 15 weeks, say abortion is banned after 15 weeks with the exception of, you know, rape or incest or the health of the mother and whatnot. And by the way, just an aside, a lot of prominent pediatricians who have had courage to come out and talk about this have said, look, there is no circumstance where an abortion is necessary where a mother's health is in jeopardy. Early birth? Premature birth? Yes. Abortion? Never. Almost never. Okay? So I yet that chanting point is still out there. Oh, you know, the Republicans don't even want to stop abortion. They don't even want to allow an abortion when the mother's health is in jeopardy. Well, again, I defer to the medical community, specifically these pediatricians who are willing to come out and talk. Because, again, medicine has gotten so ideological these days that some of them are afraid to talk, are afraid that their livelihood would be undermined. And I understand that. But anyways, so a lot of people look back at 2022, say once Roe v. Wade was overturned in the summer, then, of course, that following election cycle, Republicans were expected to have a red wave, and it turns out they didn't. They turns out they lost ground in the U.S. Senate and had only a modest gain in the U.S. House, when normally the first midterm in a new president's first term, that the opposite party makes significant gains, and that just wasn't the case. And a lot of people blamed abortion, and pro-lifers were thrown under the bus. And the fact of the matter is, some of the strictest abortion laws, Florida and Georgia, that's where Republicans had the biggest success in terms of statewide races. Brian Kemp, Ron DeSantis, both overwhelmingly reelected. So I think what it boils down to is Republicans, for whatever reason, didn't seem prepared for Roe v. Wade to be overturned, or didn't know how to handle it. Or it could be, I hate to say it, a lot of these Republican elected officials maybe thought it would never get overturned, but used it as a wedge issue to keep voters within their base. But once it was solved, then what? And as I said, I don't believe there are any laws, you know, that are going to completely eradicate abortion. Because, again, you look at Iowa, just our neighbors to the south. They have a pretty restrictive abortion law. Okay? Well, if a young lady gets pregnant, wants to have an abortion, she just needs to travel north and cross the border here in Minnesota, where we have probably one of the most radical abortion laws in the country, I dare say even the world. Okay? So, really, what is going to happen is there's going to have to be a cultural shift. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, as Donald Trump, he finally came out this past Monday with his statement saying, "My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint. The states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many states will have a different number of weeks. At the end of the day, it is all about the will of the people." Now, of course, your staunchest pro-life activists and advocates are going to come out and find that statement wholly unacceptable. And they're feeling betrayed by Trump as a result. Because a lot of these pro-lifers, they held up Trump as borderline a pro-life hero because of the three Supreme Court justices that he nominated and were ultimately confirmed that allowed Roe v. Wade to be overturned, because it was overturned by a 5-4 vote, okay, which wouldn't have happened by the old makeup of the court prior to Trump. Plus, Donald Trump was the first ever president to appear live and in person at the big Washington, D.C. March for Life that's been going on for decades. You know, on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which was ruled in January of 1973. Donald Trump, the first president to ever appear live and in person. So a lot of pro-lifers were taken aback that he would make a statement like this. And I just caution you, that's why you don't put your faith in fallible human beings. And Donald Trump very much is a fallible human being, like we all are. Okay. And I'm not doing this to rip Trump. Obviously, my listeners know that I've been very critical of Trump in a lot of areas. But with this, I can't be overly critical, because I honestly didn't expect a lot from him. This is about as good as I expected from him. And I hate to say it, it could have been a lot worse, because there were rumors that he very much supports a 15-week ban, where anything up to 15 weeks is permissible, but beyond 15 weeks, abortion would be banned, but only in cases of rape or incest or the health of the mother. I mean, that's Donald Trump's position. But the fact that he is not advocating for some sort of national abortion law, okay, where if Congress were to say, "Hey, we want to codify Roe," he's not committed to that. But again, like I said, this left a lot of pro-lifers wanting. And between those anti-Israeli Democrats who are saying not they are uncommitted, you know, in voting for Joe Biden unless he calls for a ceasefire, and on the Republican side, pro-lifers who feel disaffected and maybe some now feel politically homeless, this may be an election where, you know, the winner is going to be determined by the other side that stays home in bigger droves, right? So my position quite simply is I'm as staunch a pro-life person as there is. So I believe there's not only a moral obligation to protect life, but also a legal one. Because I believe life begins at conception. And the fetus growing inside is worthy of protection. I believe it has reached a status of personhood. Even though I get it, a fetus is, say, maybe 3 to 6 weeks old would not be viable outside the womb. I get it. But if allowed to continue to full term, would be a viable human being. And see, this is the back and forth that has been going on. The pro-abortion, pro-choice people believe that, hey, my body, my choice. I should be able to determine what kind of health care I want. And again, this is the Orwellian application, you know, where snuffing out a human life is quote-unquote health care. Whereas pro-lifers saying, well, we're not trying to control your body. We're trying to offer up protection to a legitimate human life. It's a separate being from yourself. And then, of course, the comeback is, well, this being wouldn't live were it not for me taking the most optimal care of it. And it wouldn't survive if it were born, say, 6 weeks from conception, you know. That it's been that back and forth. So I think what has happened is, like so many issues, we talk past each other, you know, where we cast aspersions, where it's like, you know, pro-lifers are accused of wanting to control women's bodies, and you get some people on the life side who's saying, well, you're just cold and callous, and because you won't own up to the consequences of your decision, i.e. to, you know, have sex without planning to get pregnant, but that's how it happens, okay, that you just want to be cold and callous about it. And again, I've met women who've had abortions, and it's a heartbreaking decision. And I would say the vast majority who have had abortions, you know, don't do so with any sense of pride. It's like, look at me, freedom. I can go out and have sex indiscriminately, and if I happen to get pregnant, oops, oh, well, there's a simple medical procedure that can get rid of it. There are some women who may have that cavalier attitude, but I would venture to say it's a small minority. Okay, so what am I saying here? I'm saying that this has to be a cultural shift, that the life growing inside a woman is worthy of protection. And I've said this many times from a pro-life perspective. Pro-lifers have to get better at advocating for organizations which are willing to not only see a woman through the full-term pregnancy, but after the baby is born, to provide assistance for that woman, to help her get back on her feet. Or maybe the woman decides to keep the baby, even better, you know, to provide valuable assistance, to allow them to have a chance at raising a child. They may say, you know what, this child is unplanned, but it's not the child's fault, so therefore I think it should be born alive. And I should be able to raise this child. Okay. And we have many organizations which we support here, whether it's the Robbinsdale Women's Center, you know, Pro-Life Across America. Here are jingles practically every hour, the billboard people. You know, Save the Storks. I've had representatives on from that organization. Google them, Save the Storks, where they went around, go all over the country in vans with ultrasound machines and meet with pregnant women who are considering an abortion, and they perform the ultrasounds, and a lot of times these young ladies see how impactful those ultrasounds are and say, wow, this is really a legitimate human life growing inside me, and then provide support for that woman as she decides to give birth. And I'll just share a personal anecdote. You know, my wife and I, many years ago, probably a decade and a half ago, were considering adoption. And we went to this organization in North Dakota. And there were a couple of young ladies there who had given birth, but they were too young. They felt in their minds to be mothers. So they gave up their, but they didn't want to abort their babies. So they gave up their babies for adoption. And even a couple years after they had given birth, the bond was still very real. They were tearing up, sharing their testimony, because there's an undeniable bond created when a woman is carrying a baby to full term. And then when they have to give away that baby, they feel like a part of them is being ripped away. But they knew they weren't ready to be a mother, but they also knew that, hey, the baby is still worthy of life, and we want to give it to this married couple that wants to be parents and would be able to give it a life. Okay? So what is being done to care for these young ladies that still feel that bond, so they aren't feeling alone, so they aren't feeling that sense of loss? Even though the baby was born alive and given to a married couple that is raising it, they still feel that loss. So what as a pro-life community are we doing to support those women in the aftermath of that? Okay? So what I'm saying is all of that transcends politics. There isn't any law that is going to, in my opinion, completely eradicate abortions. Are there laws that could possibly, you know, inhibit the number, decrease it? Sure. But we can't seem to come into any agreement on that, on what that would look like. So, again, this is a cultural shift. You know, Abby Johnson, she used to work at Planned Parenthood, and then she saw an ultrasound up close and personal and was horrified at what she saw, an ultrasound of an abortion taking place, and was horrified. And that was her awakening. And she left Planned Parenthood as now a very staunch pro-life activist. And the thing she said recently in one of her, you know, I follow her on Instagram, definitely look up Abby Johnson on Instagram. She said, you know, what the pro-abortion side is selling is this is freedom. Hey, you know, you should be able to be free to live how you want to live. And, you know, the sexual revolution in the 60s, that's already been settled. We should be able to love whoever we want to love, however we want to love them, you know, and hookup culture. Hey, you know, this is a free society. We should be able to live like that. And whoops, if you happen to get pregnant, well, you know, you don't have to carry that baby to full term. You can have a quickie abortion, and look at that. You can still have your career. And they sell that, you know, motherhood and daughterhood and whatnot. Well, that's some sort of bondage. We should be able to break you free of that. You know, and you get all these, I think there's a prominent actor, Seth Rogen. He talks about how he and his wife, they lay in bed all day and smoke weed and watch movies while they're buck naked. Sorry to put that image in your head, folks. But that's the freedom that offers without having any kids. And as a result, I think that that's putting a real dent in the birth rate. And we could very well be facing a population crisis on the other end of the spectrum, where all of a sudden there aren't going to be enough people around to help take care of their elders in society. And again, I'm not suggesting that's the only reason you have kids, but parents will tell you that have had multiple kids, and to see their kids succeed in society and become productive citizens, that's its own great reward. So how do we shift the culture from saying, hey, not only is having a child a worthy and worthwhile endeavor and a beautiful thing, but look what can happen as they grow older in life and become productive citizens and make a difference in our society. Isn't that a good thing? And so what has to happen for that culture to shift? I'm not really sure, but I can tell you, seeing what kids are subjected to today and what we're putting them through, that's not, and sadly, that's discouraging people from having kids. Like, why would I want to bring a kid into this world? Look at all of the chaos and uncertainty and rancor that's taking place. So it's going to be, have to be a pretty dramatic shift, but as we're hearing from a lot of these pro-life organizations, they are doing yeoman's work to say that, yeah, that shift in the culture to say that becoming a parent is worthwhile and raising children to become productive citizens is indeed a beautiful thing and a worthwhile endeavor. Yeah, we're pressing forward with that cause, and we're going to convince people that, yes, this is a worthwhile thing. 651-289-4488 is the number to call. You can also weigh in via Twitter at hashtag NarnShow. That's hashtag N-A-R-N Show. Or you can follow along at our Northern Alliance Radio Network Facebook page, where we have a live stream of the broadcast up and running. Brad Carlson, the closer, back with one final segment this hour. Go nowhere.
She's smart, beautiful, and a former Fox Business Channel host. Now you can hear her take on the day's financial news on The Trish Regan Show on the Salem Podcast Network. Hear intelligent radio through your smart speaker. Just say, play the Patriot, Minneapolis.
More than 200 members of Congress are standing up for AM radio listeners. I'm Brandon Tatum. The AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act will keep AM radio in cars, because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to pass this critical legislation now, or visit dependonam.com for more information. Message and data rates may apply, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This is Dennis Prager. I am excited to announce the all-new Pragertopia Plus. You can listen to my show whenever it's convenient for you, all commercial-free and all on demand. Now with Prager Plus, search topics, guests, and segments all the way back to 2010. And now a truly exciting new benefit, my monthly online video get-together for Pragertopia Plus members only. This is where, for an hour each month, Pragertopia Plus members get an exclusive chance to ask me anything. That's right, anything. It's on video. I'll be talking to you and answering your questions. We may even have a special guest every now and then. I've never done this. Submit your questions for me at Pragertopia.com. This is only available to Pragertopia Plus members. This is our chance to connect like never before. Go to Pragertopia.com or click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
Some days, I feel so down, I can barely get out of bed. Is this depression?
I feel so tense and worried all the time. Is this anxiety?
Check up on your mental health. Take an online mental health screening at MentalHealthMN.org. Mental Health Minnesota has online mental health screenings, resources, support, and connections to treatment and crisis services. All anonymous, confidential, free of charge, and open 7 days a week. Mental Health Minnesota is here for you. MentalHealthMN.org. Sponsored by Mental Health Minnesota, the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, and this station.
Do you want to make a difference in your community? Volunteer with your local fire department. Operational and non-operational positions are available, and training is provided. Anyone can be a volunteer. You just need the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. When your community needs you, will you be there to answer the call? Learn more about volunteering at makemeafirefighter.org. That's makemeafirefighter.org.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio monthly for connection. If you value this station, help ensure it stays in vehicles for the next generation by visiting dependonam.com.
Hey, welcome back. AM 1280 The Patriot, Northern Alliance Radio Network, with me, Brad Carlson. One final segment this hour. Only got a couple of minutes left, so not going to have time to take phone calls, so we'll take them in the second hour. But hey, the live stream of the broadcast is still up and running at our Northern Alliance Radio Network Facebook page, so feel free to check us out there. And you can also weigh in via Twitter at hashtag NarnShow, hashtag N-A-R-N Show, for any of the topics we have discussed thus far. And as always, we appreciate you tuning in. I could probably take a whole hour talking about this next topic, but I've only got a couple of minutes, so I'll just say that I was young and brand new in my working life, working career, when the saga of O.J. Simpson was going on in the summer of 1994, when his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend Ronald Goldman were found murdered at her home. And within a few days, O.J. became a suspect. And when he was going to be brought in for arrest and charged and booked, he wasn't home. And then, of course, his Bronco was tracked down, being driven by his friend Al Collings. And, of course, the infamous footage on, I believe it was Highway 405 in Southern California, the white Bronco going down the freeway with multiple police cars in pursuit. And it just turned into a big circus, and it all culminated a little over a year later in October of 1995 when O.J. was found not guilty of double murder. And I remember that particular incident, June 17th, 1994, the white Bronco chase, and his friend, O.J. Simpson's personal friend, Robert Kardashian, read a letter that O.J. penned about how distraught he was, and it sounded very much like a suicide letter. So while this white Bronco chase was taking place, I thought it was going to end with O.J. sucking on a revolver, because he just sounded completely in despair given this letter that was conveyed. And how this was on TV all over the world. People were glued to their TV watching the white Bronco chase. And people seeing where this was taking place ran to freeway overpasses with signs and whatnot saying free OJ and whatever else. And I will say June 17th, 1994 is a permanent stain in American history because it gave birth to two unforgivable trends. First is this country's obsession with reality television. And second, the name Kardashian making it into the public domain. Hour number one in the books, hour number two coming back in mere moments. AM 1280 The Patriot, Northern Alliance Radio Network with me, Brad Carlson. Back in a few.
I was 9 weeks along and didn't know what else to do.
I felt helpless and I didn't want to leave it up to her, but I didn't know what to do or say.
I didn't know there were other options available.
I didn't know it was a baby with a beating heart at 18 days.
Hello, my name is Marian Koharski. I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America, the billboard people. So often we get calls just like this from men and women seeking help and alternatives. Our 800 hotline connects callers to the services they need for pregnancy, adoption, as well as post-abortion assistance. If you know someone who is pregnant or in need of confidential counseling or would like to support the work of Pro-Life Across America, please call 1-800-366-7773 or check us out on the web, ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org. Pro-Life Across America is educational, non-political, and tax-deductible.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception. Pro-Life Across
America, the people. This is Dennis Prager. I am excited to announce the all-new Pragertopia Plus. You can listen to my show whenever it's convenient for you, all commercial-free and all on demand. Now with Prager Plus, search topics, guests, and segments all the way back to 2010. And now a truly exciting new benefit, my monthly online video get-together for Pragertopia Plus members only. This is where, for an hour each month, Pragertopia Plus members get an exclusive chance to ask me anything. That's right, anything. It's on video. I'll be talking to you and answering your questions. We may even have a special guest every now and then. I've never done this. Submit your questions for me at Pragertopia.com. This is only available to Pragertopia Plus members. This is our chance to connect like never before. Go to Pragertopia.com or click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
We're taking you inside the Invergrove Hyundai Service Department.
Hello, I'm Jared, journeyman technician from Invergrove Hyundai, and I've been here about 10 years.
Jared, what does my vehicle need to make it through the icy cold winter?
So what I recommend for getting ready for winter, good set of snow tires, or at least a tire rotation, your better tires up front, alignment, and a good set of brakes. Oh, and a good battery.
So why do people come to Invergrove Hyundai for service?
It's a great store. People up front are very friendly and helpful, and with their mechanics that we have in the back, we do get the job done right the first time. We've all been here for multiple years, a good group of guys. Our quality work is very good.
For immediate openings for service on your Hyundai vehicle, contact Invergrove Hyundai now. Whether you need a new set of tires or routine maintenance, trust the professional service technicians at Invergrove Hyundai. Find them online at InvergroveHyundai.com.
AM 1280, the